44. The Bright Side. We are indeed intrigued, for we thought it well hidden, insignificant among our many realms. Vale lounged in a tavern tent with her men. Her boots up on a table, chair tipped back, she listened to the life bubbling around her. People drinking and chatting, others strolling the path outside, shouting and joking. She enjoyed the warm, enveloping buzz of fellow humans who had turned this tomb of rock into something alive again. It still daunted her to contemplate the size of the tower. How had anyone built a place this big? It could gobble up most cities Vale had seen without having to loosen its belt. Well, best not to think about that. You needed to sneak low beneath all the questions that distracted scribes and scholars. That was the only way to get anything useful done. Instead, she focused on the people. Their voices blended together, and collectively they became a faceless crowd. But the grand thing about people was that you could also choose to focus on particular faces, really see them, and find a wealth of stories. So many people with so many lives, each a separate little mystery. Infinite detail, like pattern. Look close at his fractal lines and you'd realize each little ridge had an entire architecture of its own. Look close at a given person and you'd see their uniqueness, see that they didn't quite match whatever broad category you'd first put them in. "So," Red said, talking to Ishna. Vale had brought three of her men today with the spy woman to train them. So Vale could listen, learn, and try to judge if this woman was trustworthy, or if she was some kind of plant. "This is great," Red continued. "But when do we learn the stuff with the knives? Not that I'm eager to kill anyone, just, you know."
"I know what?"
Ishna asked.
"Knives are devi," Red said.
"Devi?"
Vale asked, opening her eyes. Red nodded.
"Devi, you know. Incredible or neat, but in a smooth way." "Everyone knows that knives are devi," Gaz added.
Ishna rolled her eyes. The short woman wore her hava with hand covered, and her dress had a light touch of embroidery. Her poise and dress indicated she was a dark-eyed woman of relatively high social standing. Vale drew more attention, and not just because of her white jacket and hat. It was the attention of men assessing whether they wanted to approach her, which they didn't do with Ishna. The way she carried herself, the prim hava, kept them back. Vale sipped her drink, enjoying the wine.
"You've heard lurid stories, I'm sure," Ishna said. "But espionage is not about knives in alleys. I'd barely know what to do with myself if I had to stab someone."
The three men deflated.
"Espionage," Ishna continued, "is about the careful gathering of information. Your task is to observe, but not to be observed. You must be likable enough that people talk to you, but not so interesting that they remember you."
"Well, Gaz is out," Red said.
"Yeah,"
Gaz said. "It's a curse to be so storming interesting."
"Would you two shut up?" Vatha said.
The lanky soldier had leaned in, cup of cheap wine left untouched.
"How?" he asked. "I'm tall. Gaz has one eye. We'll be remembered."
"You need to learn to channel attention towards superficial traits you can change and away from traits you cannot. Red, if you wore an eye patch, that detail would stick in their minds. Vathai can teach you how to slouch, so your height isn't noticeable. And if you add an unusual accent, people will describe you by that. Gaz, I could put you in a tavern and have you lie on the table in a feigned drunken stupor. Nobody will notice the eye patch. They'll ignore you as a drunkard. That is beside the point. We must begin with observation. If you are to be useful, you need to be able to make quick assessments of a location, memorize details, and be able to report back. Now, close your eyes."
They reluctantly did so, Vale joining them.
"Now," Ishna said, Can any of you describe the tavern's occupants? Without looking, mind you. Gaz scratched at his eye patch.
There's a cute one at the bar. She might be Thalen.
What color is her blouse?
Well, it's low cut, and she's grown some nice rock buds. There's this really ugly guy with an eye patch, Red said. Short, annoying type. Drinks your wine when you aren't looking.
Vatha? Ishna asked. What about you?
I think there were some guys at the bar, he said. They were in Sabarial uniforms, and maybe half the tables were occupied. I couldn't say by who.
Better, Ishna said. I didn't expect you to be able to do this. It's human nature to ignore these things. I'll train you, though, so that...
Wait, Vatha said. What about Vale? What does she remember?
3 men at the bar, Vale said absently. Older man with whitening hair and 2 soldiers, probably related, judging by those hooked noses. The younger one is drinking wine. The older one is trying to pick up the woman Gaz noticed. She's not Thalen, but she's wearing Thalen dress with a deep violet blouse and a forest green skirt. I don't like the pairing, but she seems to. She's confident, used to playing with the attention of men. But I think she came here looking for someone because she's ignoring the soldier and keeps glancing over her shoulder. The barkeep is an older man, short enough that he stands on boxes when he fills orders. I bet he hasn't been a barkeep long. He hesitates when someone orders and he has to glance over the bottles, reading their glyphs before he finds the right one. There are 3 barmaids, one is on break, and 14 customers, other than us. She opened her eyes. I can tell you about them.
Won't be necessary, Ishna said as Red clapped softly. Very impressive, Vale. Though I should note that there are 15 other customers, not 14.
Vale started, then glanced around the tent room again, counting, as she'd done in her head just a moment ago. 3 at that table, 4 over there, 2 women standing together by the door, and a woman she'd missed, nestled into a chair by a small table at the back of the tent. She wore simple clothing, a skirt and blouse of Alethi peasant design. Had she intentionally chosen clothing that blended in with the white of the tent and brown of the tables? And what was she doing there?
Taking notes, Vale thought with a spike of alarm.
The woman had carefully hidden a little notebook in her lap.
Who is she? Vale hunkered down. Why is she watching us?
Not us specifically, Ishna said. There will be dozens like her in the market, moving like rats, gathering what information they can. She might be independent, selling tidbits she finds, but likely she's employed by one of the high princes. That's the job I used to do. I'd guess from the people she's watching that she's been told to gather a report on the mood of the troops.
Vale nodded and listened intently as Ishna started training the men in memory tricks. She suggested they should learn glyphs and use some ploy, like making marks on their hands, to help them keep track of information. Vale had heard of some of these tricks, including the one Ishna talked about, the so-called Mind Museum. Most interesting were Ishna's tips on how to tell what was relevant to report and how to find it. She talked about listening for the names of high princes and for common words used as stand-ins for more important matters, and about how to listen for someone who had just the right amount of drink in them to say things they shouldn't. Tone, she said, was key. You could sit 5 feet from someone sharing important secrets, but miss it because you were focused on the argument at the next table over. The state she described was almost meditative, sitting and letting your ears take in everything, your mind latching on to only certain conversations. Vale found it fascinating. But after about an hour of training, Gaz complained that his head felt like he'd had 4 bottles already. Red was nodding, and the way his eyes were crossed made him seem completely overwhelmed. Vatha, though, he'd closed his eyes and was reeling off descriptions of everyone in the room to Ishna. Vale grinned. For as long as she'd known the man, he'd gone about each of his duties as if he had a boulder tied to his back, slow to move, quick to find a place to sit down and rest. Seeing this enthusiasm from him was encouraging. In fact, Vale was so engaged, she completely missed how much time had passed. When she heard the market bells, she cursed softly.
"I'm a storming fool."
"Vale?" Vatha asked.
"I've got to get going," she said. "Shallan has an appointment."
Who would have thought that bearing an ancient divine mantle of power and honor would involve so many meetings?
"And she can't make it without you," Vatha said.
"Storms, have you watched that girl? She'd forget her feet if they weren't stuck on. Keep practicing. I'll meet up with you later."
She pulled on her hat and went dashing through the breakaway. A short time later, Shallan Davar, now safely tucked back into a blue hava, strolled through the hallway beneath Urithiru. She was pleased with the work that Vale was doing with the men, but storms, did she have to drink so much? Shallan burned off practically an entire barrel's worth of alcohol to clear her head. She took a deep breath, then stepped into the former library room. Here she found not only Navani, Yasna, and Teshev, but a host of ardents and scribes. May Aladar, Adratagia from Carbranth. There were even three storm wardens, the odd men with the long beards who liked to predict the weather. Shallan had heard that they would occasionally use the blowing of the winds to foretell the future, but they never offered such services openly. Being near them made Shallan wish for a glyph ward. Vale didn't keep any handy, unfortunately. She was basically a heretic, and thought about religion as often as she did sea silk prices in Ral Elarim. At least Yasna had the backbone to pick a side and announce it. Vale would simply shrug and make some wisecrack. It pattern whispered from her skirt. "Shallan?" Right. She'd been just standing in the doorway, hadn't she? She walked in, unfortunately passing Yanila, who was acting as Teshev's assistant. The pretty young woman stood with her nose perpetually in the air, and was the type of person whose very enunciation made Shallan's skin crawl. The woman's arrogance was what Shallan didn't like. Not, of course, that Adolin had been courting Yanila soon before meeting Shallan. She had once tried to avoid Adolin's former romantic partners, but, well, that was like trying to avoid soldiers on a battlefield. They were just kind of everywhere. A dozen conversations buzzed through the room. Talk about weights and measures, the proper placement of punctuation, and the atmosphere variations in the tower. Once she'd have given anything to be in a room like this. Now she was constantly late to the meetings. What had changed? "I know how much a fraud I am," she thought, hugging the wall, passing a pretty young ardent discussing Azish politics with one of the storm wardens. Shallan had barely perused those books that Adolin had brought her. On her other side, Navani was talking fabrials with an engineer in a bright red hava. The woman nodded eagerly. "Yes, but how to stabilize it, Brightness? With the sails underneath, it will want to spin over, won't it?" Shallan's proximity to Navani had offered ample opportunity to study fabrial science. Why hadn't she? As it enveloped her, the ideas, the questions, the logic, she suddenly felt she was drowning, overwhelmed. Everyone in this room knew so much, and she felt insignificant compared to them. "I need someone who can handle this," she thought. "A scholar. Part of me can become a scholar. Not Vale or Brightness Radiant, but someone..." Pattern started humming on her dress again. Shallan backed to the wall. "No, this was her, wasn't it? Shallan had always wanted to be a scholar, hadn't she? She didn't need another persona to deal with this, right? Right?" The moment of anxiety passed, and she breathed out, forcing herself to steady.
Eventually, she pulled a pad of paper and a charcoal pencil out of her satchel, then sought out Yasna and presented herself. Yasna cocked an eyebrow.
Late again?
Sorry. I intended to ask your help understanding some of the translations we're receiving from the Dawn Chant, but we haven't time before my mother's meeting starts. Maybe I could help you. I have a few items to finish up. We can speak later. An abrupt dismissal, but nothing more than Shallan had come to expect. She walked over to a chair beside the wall and sat down. Surely, she said softly, if Yasna had known that I'd just confronted a deep insecurity of mine, she'd have shown some empathy, right?
Yasna? Pattern asked. I do not think you are paying attention, Shallan. She is not very empathetic.
Shallan sighed.
You're empathetic, though.
The pathetic part, at least. She steeled herself. I belong here, Pattern, don't I?
Yes, of course you do. You'll want to sketch them, right?
The classic scholars didn't just draw. The Oilsworn knew mathematics. He created the study of ratios in art. Galid was an inventor, and her designs are still used in astronomy today. Sailors couldn't find longitude at sea until the arrival of her clocks. Yasna's a historian, and more. That's what I want.
Are you sure?
I think so. Problem was, Vale wanted to spend her days drinking and laughing with the men, practicing espionage. Radiant wanted to practice with the sword and spend time around Adolin. What did Shallan want, and did it matter? Eventually, Navani called the meeting to order and people took seats. Scribes on one side of Navani, ardents from a variety of devotaries on the other, and far from Yasna. As the storm wardens settled down farther around the ring of seats, Shallan noticed Renarin standing in the doorway. He shuffled, peeking in, but not entering. When several scholars turned toward him, he stepped backward, as if their stares were physically forcing him out. Renarin said.
Father said I could come, just listen, maybe.
You're more than welcome, cousin, Yasna said. She nodded for Shallan to get him a stool, so she did, and didn't even protest being ordered about. She could be a scholar. She'd be the best little ward ever. Head down, Renarin rounded the ring of scholars, keeping a white-knuckled grip on a chain hung from his pocket. As soon as he sat, he started pulling the chain between the fingers of one hand, then the other. Shallan did her best to take notes and not stray into sketching people instead. Fortunately, the proceedings were more interesting than usual. Navani had most of the scholars here working on trying to understand Urithiru. Inadara reported first. She was a wizened scribe who reminded Shallan of her father's ardents, explaining that her team had been trying to ascertain the meaning of the strange shapes of the rooms and tunnels in the tower. She went on at length, talking of defensive constructions, air filtration, and the wells. She pointed out groupings of rooms that were shaped oddly, and of the bizarre murals they'd found, depicting fanciful creatures. When she eventually finished, Calamy reported on her team, who were convinced that certain gold and copper metalworks they'd found embedded in walls were fabrials, but they didn't seem to do anything, even with gems attached. She passed around drawings, then moved on to explaining the efforts, failed so far, they'd taken to try to infuse the gemstone pillar. The only working fabrials were the lifts.
I suggest,
interrupted Elthabar, head of the storm wardens,
that the ratio of the gears used in the lift machinery might be indicative of the nature of those who built it. It is the science of digitology, you see. You can judge much about a man by the width of his fingers.
And this has to do with gears.
How? Teshav asked.
In every way, Elthabar said. Why, the fact that you don't know this is a clear indication that you are a scribe. Your writing is pretty, Brightness,
but you must give more heed to science.
Pattern buzzed softly. I never have liked him, Shallan whispered. He acts nice around Dalinar, but he's quite mean.
So, which attribute of his are we totaling, and how many people are in the sample size?
Pattern asked.
Do you think, maybe, Yanala said, we are asking the wrong questions?
Shallan narrowed her eyes, but checked herself, suppressing her jealousy. There was no need to hate someone simply because they'd been close to Adolin.
It was just that something felt
off about Yanala. Like many women at court, her laughter sounded rehearsed, contained, like they used it as a seasoning rather than actually feeling it.
What do you mean, child?
Adratagia asked Yanala.
Well, brightness, we talk about the lifts, the strange fabrial column, the twisting hallways. We try to understand these things merely from their designs. Maybe instead we should figure out the tower's needs and then work backward to determine how these things might have met them.
Hmm, Navani said. Well, we know that they grew crops outside. Did some of these wall fabrials provide heat? Renarin mumbled something. Everyone in the room looked at him. Not a few seemed surprised to hear him speak, and he shrank back.
What was that, Renarin?
Navani asked.
It's not like that, he said softly. They're not fabrials. They're afabrial.
The scribes and scholars shared looks. The prince, well, he often incited such reactions. Discomforted stares.
Bright Lord? Yanala asked. Are you perhaps secretly an artifabrian? Studying engineering by night? Reading the women's script?
Several of the others chuckled. Renarin blushed deeply, lowering his eyes farther.
You'd never laugh like that at any other man of his rank, Shallan thought, feeling her cheeks grow hot. The Alethi court could be severely polite, but that didn't mean they were nice.
Renarin always had been a more acceptable target than Dalinar or Adolin. Shallan's anger was a strange sensation. On more than one occasion, she'd been struck by Renarin's oddness. His presence at this meeting was just another example. Was he thinking of finally joining the Ardents? And he did that by simply showing up at a meeting for scribes, as if he were one of the women? At the same time, how dare Yanala embarrass him?
Navani started to say something, but Shallan cut in. Surely, Yanala, you didn't just try to insult the son of the High Prince.
What? No, of course I didn't. Good, Shallan said. Because if you had been trying to insult him, you did a terrible job. And I've heard that you're very clever. So full of wit and charm and other things.
Yanala frowned at her.
Is that flattery?
We weren't talking of your chest, dear.
We're speaking of your mind. Your wonderful, brilliant mind. So keen that it's never been sharpened. So quick it's still running when everyone else is done. So dazzling it's never failed to leave everyone in awe at the things you say. So,
Yasna was glaring at her. Shallan held up her notebook. I took notes. Could we have a short break, Mother? Yasna asked.
An excellent suggestion, Navani said. 15 minutes, during which everyone should consider a list of requirements this tower would have, if it were to somehow become self-sufficient.
She rose, and the meeting broke up into individual conversations again.
I see, Yasna said to Shallan, that you still use your tongue like a bludgeon rather than a knife.
Yeah,
Shallan sighed.
Any tips?
Yasna eyed her.
You heard what she said to Renarin, Brightness?
And Mother was about to speak to her about it, Jasnah said, discreetly with a judicious word. Instead, you threw a dictionary at her head.
Sorry. She gets on my nerves.
Yanila is a fool. Just bright enough to be proud of the wits she has, but stupid enough to be unaware of how outmatched they are. Jasnah rubbed her temples.
Storms.
This is why I never take wards.
Because they give you so much trouble.
Because I'm bad at it. I have scientific evidence of that fact, and you are but the latest experiment. Jasnah shooed her away, rubbing her temples. Shallan, feeling ashamed, walked to the side of the room while everyone else got refreshments. Pattern said as Shallan leaned against the wall, notebook held closer to her chest.
Jasnah doesn't seem angry. Why are you sad?
Because I'm an idiot, Shallan said, and a fool. And because I don't know what I want.
Hadn't it been only a week or two ago that she'd innocently assumed she had it figured out? Whatever it was?
I can see him, said a voice to her side.
Shallan jumped and turned to find Renarin staring at her skirt and the pattern there, which blended into her embroidery. Distinct if you knew to look, but easy to miss.
He doesn't turn invisible? Renarin said.
He says he can't.
Renarin nodded, then looked up at her.
Thank you. For? Defending my honor. When Adolin does that, someone usually gets stabbed. Your way was pleasanter.
Well, nobody should take that tone with you. They wouldn't dare do it to Adolin. And besides, you're right. This place is one big fabrile.
You feel it too? They keep talking about this device or that device, but that's wrong, isn't it?
That's like taking the parts of a cart without realizing you've got a cart in the first place.
Shallan leaned in.
That thing we fought, Renarin. It could stretch its tendrils all the way up to the very top of Urethiru. I felt its wrongness wherever I went. That gemstone at the center is tied to everything.
Yes, this isn't only a collection of fabrials. It's many fabrials put together to make one big fabrial.
But what does it do? Shallan asked.
It does being a city. He frowned. Well, I mean, it bees a city. It does what the city is.
Shallan shivered.
And the Unmade was running it.
Which let us discover this room and the fabrial column, Renarin said. We might not have accomplished that without it. Always look on the bright side.
Logically, Shallan said, the bright side is the only side you can look on because the other side is dark.
Renarin laughed.
It brought to mind how her brothers would laugh at what she said. Maybe not because it was the most hilarious thing ever spoken, but because it was good to laugh. That reminded her of what Jasnah had said, though, and Shallan found herself glancing at the woman.
I know my cousin is intimidating, Renarin whispered to her. But you're a Radiant too, Shallan. Don't forget that. We could stand up to her if we wanted to.
Do we want to?
Renarin grimaced.
Probably not. So often she's right, and you just end up feeling like one of the 10 fools.
True, but I don't know if I can stand being ordered around like a child again. I'm starting to feel crazy. What do I do?
Renarin shrugged.
I found the best way to avoid doing what Jasnah says is to not be around when she's looking for someone to give orders to.
Shallan perked up. That made a lot of sense. Dalinar would need his radiance to go do things, right? She needed to get away, just until she could figure things out. Go somewhere. Like on that mission to Kolinar? Wouldn't they need someone who could sneak into the palace and activate the device?
Renarin, she said, you're a genius.
He blushed, but smiled.
Navani called the meeting together again, and they sat to continue discussing fabrials. Jasnah tapped Shallan's notebook, and she did a better job of taking the minutes, practicing her shorthand.
It wasn't nearly as irksome now as she had an exit strategy, an escape route. She was appreciating that when she noticed a tall figure striding through the door. Dalinar Kolin cast a shadow, even when he wasn't standing in front of the light. Everyone immediately hushed.
"Apologies for my tardiness."
He glanced at his wrist and the forearm timepiece that Navani had given him.
"Please don't stop because of me."
"Dalinar?" Navani asked. "You've never attended a meeting of scribes before."
"I just thought I should watch," Dalinar said. "Learn what this piece of my organization is doing."
He settled down on a stool outside the ring. He looked like a warhorse trying to perch on a stand meant for a show pony. They started up again, everyone obviously self-conscious. She'd have thought that Dalinar would know to stay away from meetings like this, where women and scribes... Shallan cocked her head as she saw Renarin glance at his father. Dalinar responded with a raised fist. "He came so Renarin wouldn't feel awkward," Shallan realized. "It can't be improper or feminine for the prince to be here if the storming Blackthorn decides to attend." She didn't miss the way that Renarin actually raised his eyes to watch the rest of the proceedings.